Americans got a lesson in constitutional democracy today. The Supreme Court ruled 5-4 to uphold the Affordable Care Act, the Obama health care law, Obamacare, whatever you call it. But the decision's details are fascinating for what they say about our government, the limitations of Congress, and the power of the courts to settle things that lawmakers would sometimes rather leave vague. And we do not have the luxury of vagueness today on this program as we try to look back at what has just happened. Joining us is Glenn Cohen, who's written about the case for the New England Journal of Medicine. Glenn is the co-director of the Harvard Law School's Petrie Flom Center for Health Law Policy, Biotechnology, and Bioethics. Professor Glenn Cohen, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
This is a fascinating decision to take a look at. What's your first reaction?
First reaction is a good day for the administration, not the best possible day. They would have much preferred to have the case upheld on the Commerce Clause ground, because by upholding it on the taxation power ground, it's going to enable Mitt Romney and the campaign to say things like, well, the president told you it wasn't a tax, but he lied and the Supreme Court saw through it. And things like, when he should have been focused on job creation, instead he's imposing a health care tax. So rhetorically, those are bad things for the president. But all in all, this is a good day in that he was really facing the possibility that his signature domestic achievement would be struck down. And he avoided that narrowly by a 5-4 decision.
Listen to you writing the talking points for the Mitt Romney campaign, Glenn Cohen. Very, very interesting. Let's explore this tax issue, because on the one hand, a mandate evokes the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, at least according to the plaintiffs, because it forces people to enter into some sort of commerce. But Congress just sort of said, or the court just said, forget this. Congress has virtually unlimited power to tax. This looks like a tax. It walks like a tax. So therefore, it's a tax. We're upholding it. What does that mean for consumers?
Well, for consumers, it doesn't matter which way we characterize it. So again, the administration offered three different powers under the Constitution: the Commerce Clause power, what's known as the Necessary and Proper Clause power, and the taxation power. From the perspective of a consumer, though, it's exactly the same law either way. And so consumers were facing the same thing they were facing 2 days ago, which is either you comply with the mandate or you pay a penalty. So that means that insurance companies are going to continue no pre-existing condition exclusions, community rating. Individuals are going to face the need to buy health insurance. We're going to have the same changes to the market in health insurance that would have happened under the Commerce Clause power. It's just that Justice Roberts found a way to uphold the law without having to sign on with the four liberals on the court to the claim that the Commerce Clause authorized this.
Glenn Cohen, can you get into the minds of the justices here? It seems to me as though John Roberts really wanted something more than a 5-4 decision here, couldn't get it on the strike side of the question if he just struck the whole law down on the Commerce Clause question alone, went over to the uphold on the tax side. I'm thinking he wanted to get more than a 5-4 there. Do you think there was pressure put on or a lot of horse trading and discussions between John Roberts and Justice Alito, John Roberts and Justice Kennedy?
Yeah, I'm sure there was, although I have to say, you know, his colleagues, especially Justice Kennedy and Justice Scalia, predate him on the court, and he's the Chief Justice. That the powers of the Chief Justice, though, he's first among equals, so it's not as though he has more than the bully pulpit. I mean, I think that this is actually a magnificent moment for John Roberts in terms of the things he said during his confirmation hearings, the claims he made. Many people, I think, would have dismissed them, the idea that he was really committed to the integrity of the court, that he was really committed to the idea that it should be nonpartisan. And there are things that he's done in the intervening years that make us skeptical. But I think at this moment, he showed a kind of statesmanship in his stewardship of the court. And it was much more important to him, I think, to maintain the relationship of the court to the political branches, and he did that. He would have liked 6-3, I'm sure, and you know, I'm sure that he would have liked to have brought Kennedy over. That was really the only other justice in play. But failing that, I think this was a moment where he rose to a challenge.
Fascinating reaction there from Glenn Cohen, who's written about the this case before the Supreme Court, deciding 5-4 to affirm the Affordable Health Care Act. He's written about it for the New England Journal of Medicine. He's co-director of Harvard Law School's Petrie Flom Center for Health Law Policy, Biotechnology, and Bioethics. So one more question on the tax issue, and then we've got to discuss some other details here. Does this mean that in 2014, when I'm supposed to buy insurance, I actually have insurance, but if I'm uninsured, if I'm supposed to buy insurance, that on my tax return, it's going to say, have you bought your insurance yet? Put a number here. And if I can't do that, then something's going to happen to me?
I mean, that was the plan all along. Again, and this is the system we have in place in Massachusetts right now. I live in Massachusetts, and I have to file 1099 MISC indicating that I have health insurance. So, yeah, that is what will happen. Now, at oral argument, this was very funny as a result of the case, because about 2 minutes or 3 minutes of the 6 hours of oral argument were devoted to the question about whether it could be upheld as a tax. The entire oral argument kind of skipped the issue, was focused on Commerce Clause. But at the oral argument, the Solicitor General said some things like, well, it kind of is a tax, but if you don't pay it, it's not like the government's going to go after you and throw you in jail. And he made some representations along that line. So it may be, in fact, that it's not quite as tax-like as some other taxes you're used to paying. You're not going to get thrown in jail. You're not going to be charged with tax evasion. But under the law, you're supposed to certify that you've done it. And if not, there's going to be a penalty assessed against you through the tax code.
But once again, the tax power of the Congress seems to be close to universal. I mean, if we remember those oral arguments and the questions about can the government compel you to eat broccoli, in fact, if you call it a tax, the government can force you to eat broccoli.
I mean, I found it very amusing that most of America seemed to be afraid of broccoli. We're all probably chastised by our mothers in terms of what we ate as children. But to the extent you're worried about broccoli in particular, to the extent that is the thing that concerns you, you're absolutely right that after this opinion, you can do it through the tax power. And that basically pass a tax that says, you know, anybody who doesn't eat their broccoli or buy their broccoli will pay a tax. And the idea here, the idea that's going forward, is that through the taxing power, the idea is, the political branches pay a penalty, if you'll pardon the pun, when they pass something as a tax, right? They have to tell the American
right.
people who don't like taxes. So in some ways, Obama got away with it here the first way through, in that he said it wasn't a tax. And yet at the end of the day, he's able to sustain the opinion on the view that it is a tax. And I'm sure Mitt Romney will try to make political hay about that.
Indeed. And of course, if people ate more broccoli, it would probably have more impact on our healthcare system than almost anything else that's going on. But that's neither here nor there. Talk about the Medicaid provision, the extension of that federal insurance program. The states are required to extend it, but the court ruled that no, the federal support for Medicaid can't be completely withdrawn if states refuse to comply with specific federal guidelines under this law.
Yeah, so this is the one part of the opinion where the administration lost something, although I don't think it lost something terribly valuable in this case. What it lost was, states are required to expand their Medicaid populations to cover everybody up to 133% of the federal poverty level. So that's an expansion for most states. Over the first 10 years or so, Congress basically matches the funds to do this very generously and then probably will cut back. Now, a bunch of states said, you can't force us to do this. And what the court said is, if it's a matter of telling the states that what they won't get is the new money you're promising them, you can say, we're not going to give you any extra Medicaid money if you don't do this. But what Congress can't do is say, we're going to cut you off on all Medicaid altogether if you don't do this. The court said that would be unconstitutional under a different power in the Constitution, the spending clause power. That would be coercive.
And that could invite a challenge on issues of, racial quotas and racial preferences in federal contracts across the board on highways, on Title IX. That could come back to haunt the administration.
That's right. There's a huge amount of legislation that Congress gets through and gets states to do things by threatening or promising funding. And the court has now, in several other opinions, it had hinted that there was a notion that something could be coercive, but it's never before told us that a spending clause program was coercive. So it's now inviting, as you say, a bunch of challenges where courts will have to parse through this opinion to say, well, is the new thing being offered more like cutting off the new funds, which is okay, or cutting off all of the funds, which is not?
We will revisit that, that's for sure. Glenn Cohen, just a final reaction before we go. Fascinating day, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely fascinating. I think almost no observer of the court would have expected that it would have gone down exactly this way.
And, that's one of the great things about the Supreme Court. It has the sort of intellectual power and the freedom as an institution to do things that we fundamentally can be surprised by. And that in and of itself, I think, is a great thing about American democracy. Glenn Cohen, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Glenn Cohen is the co-director of the Harvard Law School's Petrie Flom Center for Health Law Policy, Biotechnology, and Bioethics.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.